It's 18 minutes after 3. My next guest is Ken Fix, who appears on this show somewhat regularly, and he is about to put on the next in a series that he's been doing on the planets, but he's been tying them to the gods. So this one is Kronos and Saturn.
Yes.
And Saturn is the planet, but who's Kronos?
Well, Kronos was the second king of the gods who overthrew his father, Ouranos, and then was overthrown in turn by Zeus, who then became the king of the gods and also head of what was called the Olympians.
So these are the Greek gods?
Yes.
And this
I'm touching a little on Roman mythology, too. The name was Saturn when we got into Roman mythology. They changed every name except Apollo. Apollo is still Apollo in Greek and Roman mythology, but every other name changed.
Why are the planets named after Greek gods?
They're named after primarily Roman gods because the Romans were able to look up in the sky and they tied them readily to these tales of gods and goddesses. The swift arrival of Mercury in the morning lent credence to the belief that it was the messenger of the gods that was coming forth from the realm of Mount Olympus to human realm in order to conduct the business that was taking place during the day. Venus was, of course, a bright object in the sky, readily visible, and they believed that she was always, pretty much out there. And then Mars, from its ruddish appearance, then became identified with the god of war in Roman mythology. The furthest out that they could see with the unaided eye would have been Saturn. So that was identified, as far as the ancient Greeks and Romans with the deposed king of the gods, who was Kronos, and in Roman mythology, Saturn.
So did the Romans have a sense that Saturn was a long ways away?
Yes.
Because?
Well, because he had been overthrown as a king, so they believed that he was still out there, but
very faint. In other words, did they have a sense that
didn't have a sense of distance. They only had a sense of how frequently they saw them.
Ah, okay. So the deposition idea came from the fact that Saturn is kind of not there a lot of the time, and then it's there.
Correct. Yeah, it's a fairly faint object in the sky, and right now we're just coming out of a conjunction, which is the time when the Earth has the Sun in between it and the other celestial object. In this case, Saturn's directly opposite the Sun. Now, since we orbit faster, we're coming out of the conjunction. So by the end of the month, if and when you could possibly see the sunrise in Juno, with all the rain that we've been having lately, it would show up just prior to the dawn in the eastern sky in the morning, just before you get to sunrise, since it is now visible, from behind the Sun.
Your job as sort of the astronomer laureate of Juno has got to be a little frustrating with the cloud cover here.
Well, it's sort of nasty, but usually my presentations take place without the aid of the visible sky. So we just put on the presentations in the planetarium and project them on the dome, and it's done off of a PowerPoint. So it's basically a laptop computer rigged through a projector, and we project it onto the dome. We are going to have the stars tonight preceding the Kronos and Saturn show. So anybody that wants to see the stars on a terrible night like tonight will be able to come out and get that presentation before we begin the show on Kronos and Saturn.
What time does the star show start?
It starts at 6:30, and it should be over by 7:30. The Stars Tonight show will take about 15 minutes, and then it'll be about 45 minutes where I go through the mythology of Kronos and then continue on into the planetary science around Saturn, which has some very interesting developments, and it's probably has one little moon that's circling it that is the best hope for finding extraterrestrial life in the solar system.
Why?
It's a little moon called Enceladus, and it's not very much bigger than the Gulf of Mexico. But one thing that they did not see from Earth telescopes, and one thing that they did not see on the two Voyager missions that flew by Saturn, is that Enceladus actually is spewing salt water into space. There are active salt water geysers. And they've deduced, I don't know how they figure this out, but from the size of the plume and what the Cassini mission probe has run through it, actually at about a height of about 40 miles, is that the temperature of the water below the surface has to be at least minus 3 centigrade, or about 27 Fahrenheit. And anybody that lives in and around Alaska knows that if we can have fish and crabs in the water in that kind of temperature, there is a definite possibility for life on Enceladus. And it's the only planet or planetary body or, you know, moon or whatever in the solar system where we actually have salt water being detected and organic materials, according to the Cassini probe.
Do you know how the Cassini probe measured organic materials?
I don't know exactly what the sensor measurements were that detected that, but I've got quite a bit of activity, including a few short animated movies on the plumes once we get into the presentation tonight. So the mission to Enceladus is paramount to the scientists right now. They did have a probe that dropped from Cassini. It's called Huygens, and it made a soft landing on the only moon in the solar system with an atmosphere, which is Titan. And because we were able to do that, you know, we kind of figured out that Titan has a lot of the properties of Earth in its primordial state. Like, all the ingredients for life developing is there, except it's too cold. It's about 160 degrees below zero. We're on this little moon that would fit into the Gulf of Mexico on Enceladus. You actually have liquid salt water. And, you know, hey, the Earth is, how much of it is liquid salt water? A lot. So,
Ken, what's the heat source?
The heat source is actually in the plasma torus around Saturn. Saturn has a magnetic field just like Earth's, and it also has a gravitational effect along with some of the other moons where it will sort of push and pull on the moons that are rotating around it, kind of like squeezing a tennis ball. But it's that interaction with gravity from Saturn and from the other nearby moons, especially Titan, that compresses the moon Enceladus and keeps that center of it liquid and probably molten in order to keep the temperature of that water to a point where it would probably sustain life.
It's going to be dark, so probably plants are problematic.
Right. We have several instances where there's been life in the seas where there's no light available, there's no photosynthesis going on. So Enceladus is a very good possibility for life. It's certainly better than Mars or any of the moons around Jupiter, even though they've thought that Europa is actually ice encrusted over top of a liquid sea. And they were thinking about dropping a drilling rig into it and figuring out what's going on there. Where on Enceladus, we just need to get people out there with fishing rods. That's pretty much it.
An Enceladic fish. I can see it now. Now, this is all going to be part of the program that you're going to put on tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'll show the images from the descent onto Titan, including the landing, because we actually have images from the surface. And it looks like basically a dried-up riverbed or a frozen riverbed, because you can actually see rocks. And you can tell that there's been flows in different channels that have taken place on the surface of Titan. So I'll cover that, and I'll do everything that I can up through and including Enceladus, because we had an encounter just a few days ago. The Cassini-Huygens probe flew through it right around Enceladus, and it's coming around on I guess it's the short loop in a kind of a big spiral that it makes around Saturn. But its next encounter is going to be on November 6th.
And this another encounter with Enceladus.
Correct, yeah. Uh-huh. And I have raw images from NASA for the last encounter, which took place just a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have those. There's three of them, which one of them will clearly show the saltwater plumes.
It's like suddenly we're able to find answers here to some questions that have been asked for several hundred years.
Certainly. This is probably one of the most exciting planetary shows that I've had to do is this one, simply because of the discovery out at Enceladus and also with the planetary science that's going on with the space probe that's actually out there and doing science on a routine basis. Once I move out towards Uranus and then Neptune and finally Pluto, the science gets a little bit more sketchy because we have yet to place a probe even going past Pluto. The Voyager probes in the late 70s, the furthest out that they ran on the Grand Tour was Voyager 2, which took photos of Neptune, and no other probes have been out past Saturn since then.
So you're doing the whole series. So Saturn is tonight.
Correct. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did Hermes and Mercury was the first one that I did in December of 2010, and I've been moving outward through planetary science ever since. We take a break in the summer. That's when I did the retro sci-fi movies, which we're going to repeat again this next summer. And speaking of repeats, we do have a repeat coming up. The very first one that I've repeated is going to be on November 8th. It's going to be on Helios, the sun god, and the aurora. The last presentation was at the end of May, and not well attended because people were out of town heading out for the weekend. And this is also a better time for presenting a program on the aurora because there's more of a chance we're going to see it in the wintertime.
So when is that one now?
That's going to be on November 8th.
November 8th.
So about 2 weeks from tonight's show.
And then a couple of weeks later, you'll move out another.
Yes, I'm going to do Ouranos and Uranus will be at the end of November.
Okay.
So, yeah, we do have a few more in sequence. But
Let's not give it all away because I want to have you back on the show as we get further and further away.
Certainly.
Here.
And the planetarium, again, is on Glacier Highway in the Marie Drake building between the harbor and the high school. So you'll be able to find that. Just look for a big, long chain link fence.
Okay.
The sidewalk leads right into the building, and it's a funny-looking structure on the top.
Okay, good. Ken, tonight, 6:30, did you say,
is the start of the show? Yes, 6:30 to 7:30.
Okay, and about 7:30 it's over? And
yes.
Folks can go home. Wonderful. Thank you very much for telling us all this.
Thanks, Pat, for having me.
It's 32 minutes after 3. You're in tune with Juno Afternoon. This is Pat Moore. My guests in the studio with me now are Stacy Polson and Karen Benet Peterson. They're here to tell us about all the wonderful things that are happening at Nugget Mall in honor of Halloween. So what's up?
We have a lot of things going on for Halloween at the Nugget Mall, starting with our Halloween carnival that's sponsored by Helping Hands. We also have a haunted house that's sponsored by Boy Scouts and our firefighters, and Halloween photos, which are sponsored by Thunder Mountain Music Department. They started on the 21st. However, this weekend, on Friday the 28th, we have all three events happening from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. On Saturday, the haunted house will run from noon until 4 p.m., the Halloween Carnival and Halloween Photos will run from noon until 5 p.m. We will have a costume contest starting at 4 for sign-up and judging at 4:20. And then on Sunday, October 30th, all three events, the Carnival, the Haunted House, and the Halloween Photos will run from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Then on Monday the 31st, the Halloween Carnival and the Photos will run from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and we'll have trick-or-treating from 5 until 6:30 p.m. We also have pumpkin carving for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So if you're involved in Big Brothers and Big Sisters, you can come and carve a pumpkin. That will be located in the Plum Tree Room. It used to be the Plum Tree Store. And they'll be there from 2 until 5:30 p.m. So you probably want some prices, huh?
In a moment, but I guess my question is there, you know, is there any room for the merchants left? Or
yeah.
The mall is beginning to sound like a Halloween circus with all of this stuff going on.
Oh, it's great. It's great fun. Yeah. In fact, we've had these three events for the last 2 or 3 years, uh-huh. and it's a lot of fun. Noise, kids, candy. In fact, the carnival sells cotton candy, and it's orange.
Orange cotton candy for in honor of Halloween.
That's right.
I was in there. I was doing a special event with the Amateur Radio Club when they were building the haunted house, and the scouts were carrying some of the weirdest things. That haunted house is a complex structure. It's
The scouts and the firefighters have been doing this haunted house for at least the last 3 years. That's how long I've worked at the mall. They have it down pat. This is such a complex haunted house, and it's really scary.
Yeah.
You can hear people screaming as you walk by, and I've been through it.
Uh-huh.
But it's
did
one
you
of
scream?
The, oh, yeah. But, yeah, it's one of the best haunted houses there is in town.
And they have it so that if you have...
This is Karen speaking.
Right. They have it so that you can decide if you want it to be really, really scary or if you have little ones. You could say, no, I don't want it to be very scary.
So they can, they have a scare control.
Right, they have a scare control. And I think they have a kid that runs through the whole haunted house saying what level this is for scare tactics, you know.
Right.
Okay, no, we have a little one coming.
Okay, level 6.
Right.
So and for the haunted house, for one visit, it's $3. And if you want to go through again, it's $5. So you can decide before you go in.
Oh, I see. So... Two trips for $5, or one trip for $3.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Right.
So, and where does that money go? Who's?
Well, each group that is putting on these events makes the money.
So the scouts and firefighters are collecting.
Yeah, and since the scouts have been doing this for quite a few years, and they usually donate the money that they get from this event to other people, to other groups.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Helping Hands needs all the help they can get to help raise food for people in need. So that's just a great event in the first place. And to get into the carnival, it's $5 for 6 tickets. I don't know how much they charge for the cotton candy. You'll just have to go in and check
the orange cotton candy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And the photos are being offered by Thunder
Mountain. Do they actually have, they have a machine. They're making cotton candy.
They do
there.
Make it.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
The
photos are being offered by the music department, and they use that money for traveling.
Well, it started up because last year what Thunder Mountain did was just huge. They took the entire music department at Thunder Mountain High School and took them down to Anaheim for this Heritage Festival.
Hmm.
And it was just huge, and they needed to make a lot of money. It was a huge fundraiser that they needed to do. And they took down... over 90 kids. I can't remember the exact number now. But the kids came back with 2 golds, a silver, and a bronze. They got a letter from the legislation. They got a letter from the governor on some of the things they did. It was a remarkable thing that Thunder Mountain did. Unfortunately, it cost an awful lot of money, and they're still paying for it. But they're also trying to raise money to start building for their next trip that they'd like to take these kids on, and then plus to... They have to buy violins, or they have to buy musical equipment and their score, you know, charts that they need for music. And so it's a huge undertaking just to be in the music department.
And their outfits.
And the uniforms that they need to have. So they're trying to raise money, and we're trying to have the kids do it. And so this was one of the ideas that they came up with. Well, it was Stacy's idea. She was telling me that, you know, hey, well, how about having some Halloween photos? And how about you guys taking the pictures of little ones? And so these high school kids are really getting into it. They're taking the pictures. They're getting the kids to smile and laugh and get the photos. And they had a lot of fun last year. They did a lot of face painting as well. And so they're doing, like, email. You can have an email photo be sent to you for $5. They will print off a 3x5 for $7 and an 8x10 for $24. And the gals or the people that are taking the photos, they're really doing an excellent job. They're learning how to take photography from their photograph class that they have at school.
Mm.
So they're getting to integrate their education as well into this whole thing. And then face painting, we've got some artists that are involved as well with this. So it's not entirely just the music department. We're getting the photography department is kind of getting involved a little bit in the music, and then the art department is kind of getting involved. So you're getting teenagers involved with the little kids. And they've been having a lot of fun with it. I've seen quite a lot of interaction.
It's not just little kids, though. We've seen a lot of teenage groups come in for photos, too. And especially on Halloween, they'll be open. So when kids are already wearing their costumes, mm-hmm. stop by and get a photo.
Yeah. And then your face painting, if you want to add your face to add to your costume, they'll do a small little bit for $1 or a medium for $2 or a full face for $3. And
so
then if the kids aren't amped up, there's more candy to buy.
So if you want to finish your costume, they'll help you finish the face part of it.
Right,
with the good paints. Yeah, okay. There was a discussion going on someplace about where you would get face paint. So I'll tell the people that we're talking about it that I know where you can do that. They were talking about supplies, but why not have somebody else do the job for you?
Yeah, there's some great dog faces and some great tiger faces that I know they do.
All right.
Yeah.
Stacy, you said trick-or-treating in the mall. How does that work?
Well, we have plastic bags available at the mall office, and you can just drop by the mall office, get one off the door. It starts at 5 o'clock.
Halloween?
On Halloween day.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It'll last for an hour and a half. And most of the merchants set up a candy station right in front of their store so kids can circulate around the mall and pick up candy. And it's a great way to go trick-or-treating because it's safe.
Yeah, if it's out like it is tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah,
warm, it's dry, it's lit. You know, it's, and people have a lot of fun.
Your costume is not blowing off.
Yeah.
No costume. Soaking wet.
Malfunction.
Yeah. Well, so it's really the Halloween Mall here. Have you thought about changing the name?
Well, actually, we do a lot of great community events at the Nugget Mall, and this is just one of them.
Uh-huh. What's the next one?
We have our Black Friday coming up, Doorbuster in November. We have Arts and Crafts Fairs coming up. We've got three.
Yeah.
The first one's the 5th and 6th of November, then the 19th and 20th of November, and then the first weekend in December.
Big opportunities for finding a really special Christmas gift.
Yeah, and it's not just artists in Juneau. It's from all over the Southeast.
Ah.
So lots of unique things will be there. And there are a lot of people that come for those Arts and Crafts Fairs.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of unique, interesting things and fun. Santa will be coming to the mall on the 26th of November, and hopefully the helicopter will be able to drop him off if the weather cooperates. And we have a gingerbread house competition in December. Gastineau Air Modelers Club is going to be here in December. We have free immunizations for kids done by the Juneau Kids Coalition. That's November 12th. Parks and Rec will have sports sign-ups on November 12th as well. So lots coming up.
In case someone doesn't remember every one of these items, that there's probably some way you can find out where the schedule is. How do you do that?
There's a couple ways. I have sheets that have all of these events listed on them, and they're located on the mall office, which is across the hall from Vintage Fair Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
It's also on our website, which is nuggetmalljuneau.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call our hotline, which is 789-9014, and that's a monthly list of events in the mall.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And I wish you great success with the fundraiser, particularly for the Thunder Mountain Music Department and all that sort of stuff. It sounds like a really exciting time at Nugget Mall.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Every year when we're done trick-or-treating and we're all sick of eating Tootsie Rolls by the pound, off we go to a strange kind of meeting that's for every kid from miles around. Down at the firehouse where all the firefighters are putting on their yearly trick-or-treat, they drape the firehouse, they decorate the pumper, and all put on a costume or a sheet. As the witches and the zombies and the goblins all convene,
for a killer diller thriller of a Goose Town Halloween. But new this year, in the rear of the station stood a weird habitation that gave all of us chills. Clanking chains and a nightmare vibration, well, it made you want to run for the hills. They built a spook house, those wacky firefighters, the sound effects and lighting they prepared. They made that firehouse a very scary area, and frankly, even I was kind of scared as the witches and the zombies turned a ghostly shade of green on a killer diller thriller of a Goose Town Halloween. Little vampires started wailing, little mummies were coming unwound. All at once, though, something happened to turn the whole evening around.
It's a fire! 2 alarms! Sorry, kids, party's over!
It was a madhouse, with everybody running from the spook house to find their boots and helmets in the fire.
It's 3:45. You're in tune with KTOO FM.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 25th of October, 2011. The great English poet Geoffrey Chaucer, author of the Canterbury Tales, died on this day in the year 1400, and since his birthday is unknown, we remember him on the anniversary of his death. Not a great deal is known about Chaucer. He fought with the English army, 1359, during the invasion of France. Spent most of his life in public service. He was a comptroller for customs at the Port of London, commissioner of roads. He was a diplomat. He survived several outbreaks of plague, including the Black Death. Best known for the Canterbury Tales, making a pilgrimage to the shrine of St. Thomas Becket at Canterbury Cathedral, common in Chaucer's time. And in his poem, he has 29 pilgrims, as well as Chaucer himself, setting out from the Tabard Inn, agreeing to a friendly storytelling competition. He never finished the Canterbury Tales, so we don't know which pilgrim was the winner of the contest. It's the birthday of Pablo Picasso, Malaga, Spain, 1881. He was just 18 years old, living in Barcelona, painting pictures of his friends, when one of his paintings was selected for inclusion in a World's Fair in Paris. He went to Paris, he saw paintings by Manet, Cézanne, Degas, Toulouse-Lautrec, and decided to be an artist. And it's the birthday of the comedian Minnie Pearl, Sarah Ophelia Colley, born 1912 in Centerville, Tennessee. She was with the Grand Ole Opry for more than 50 years. It was on this day, 1854, in the Crimean War, a British light brigade misunderstood its orders and charged Russian troops on a hill. Hundreds were surrounded, about 200 were killed. The poet laureate of Great Britain, Alfred Tennyson, read the account of the disaster and wrote the famous poem, which is our poem for today. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward, all in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said, into the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the light brigade, was there a man dismayed, not though the soldiers knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die, into the valley of death, rode the 600. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them, cannon in front of them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell, boldly they rode and well, into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabering the gunners there, charging an army, while all the world wondered. Plunged in the battery smoke, right through the line they broke, Cossack and Russian, reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell, they that had fought so well came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made, all the world wondered, honor the charge they made, honor the Light Brigade, noble 600. The Charge of the Light Brigade by Alfred Lord Tennyson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. And by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 10 minutes to 4. This is Pat Moore. You're in tune with KTOO-FM, and this is Juneau Afternoon. We're going to hear now from Christy Loney. Christy was the caretaker at the Shrine of Saint Therese from 1988 to 1996, and she wrote a book after leaving the shrine called Life by the Lynn. The shrine sits on the Lynn Canal, and this is an excerpt from her book read by the author.
Ehrman Entertainment. The table was all set, and we were anticipating a wonderful time celebrating Thanksgiving Day together with friends. Bob and I got up early to stuff the turkey and begin to prepare the feast for later in the day. Then we left for the combined church's worship service in the valley. During the week previous to Thanksgiving, we had an unwanted visitor decide to take up residence in our cozy cabin, an ermine, resplendent in his beautiful winter coat. For those of you not familiar with this really beautiful mammal, it is a highly skilled predator. It kills by delivering a powerful and accurate bite to the back of the prey's neck. Having this slinky, sly animal inside our house did not give me much peace of mind, as I imagined this furry creature joining us in bed at night. However, even with our door closed, thinking this would keep it out of our room, we discovered this wily weasel could flatten itself and slide underneath the door. In this way, it could hide almost anywhere in the house, behind cupboards, the fridge or stove, and it could even climb into drawers. The ermine, or short-tailed weasel, is small and has a brown or yellowish-brown fur in the late spring, summer, and early fall months. But then it slowly grows a soft white coat for winter disguise, with only a tiny black tip of the tail left unchanged. They have very short legs with sharp claws on the toes, a long snout, big eyes, and a long, sleek, slender body about 10 inches, with a long, narrow tail about 3 inches, which, as already mentioned, has a small black tip. They only weigh about 7 ounces, but eat about 40% of their weight every day, so are always on the lookout for a meal. They have long sensor whiskers with which they can smell their prey. They are carnivorous creatures, meat eaters, so we never had much of a problem with rats or mice when they were around. However, they also prey on animals bigger than themselves, like rabbits, and they eat eggs, small birds, fish, insects, and berries. They are prized by furriers for their beautiful winter pelt. But we were not interested in the fur. We just wanted this ermine back out in the forest where he belonged. Day after day we tried to catch this creature, but nothing seemed to work. We just hoped he would not appear and frighten our guests. However, Mr. Ermine must have liked the smell of turkey and decided to join the feast, much to our consternation and the amusements of our guests. So, how to catch an ermine became the entertainment of the day. The women sat at the table enjoying chit-chat and coffee, while the men discussed means and methods to outwit the weasel with the white coat. I wish you could have seen the various traps that were constructed, all to no avail. The ermine seemed to be just as interested as were we. He would peek out from behind the cupboard to see what was happening, venture into the room, always staying at a safe distance as he eyed the latest trap, then sniff around and retreat before he was caught. Finally, the men had the perfect plan, a slide. They took a medium-length board and applied spoonfuls of peanut butter at strategic intervals to entice the ermine up the slide, to the top of it, where his weight would cause him to fall into our laundry basket. Once the slide was ready, it was placed over near the cupboard behind which the ermine was hiding. Silence prevailed as everyone watched and waited. Finally, our ermine entertainment entered from behind the curtain cupboard. The stage was set. He was very curious, but also very careful, watching with his big black eyes for any movement by the men that might threaten his safety. It was simply hilarious to watch him slowly climb up the board, holding on with his sharp claws and reaching with his snout for the peanut butter, then quickly slide back down to safety. But the peanut butter tasted so good, he just had to have some more. So back he went. Over and over we watched in amazement as he would slip and slide on the peanut butter board, each time going higher and higher. Then bravery, or perhaps it was greed, took him all the way to the top of the slide, and suddenly, without warning, he fell into the basket. I have never seen man move so fast. Slam, bam, the lid was on the basket, with the ermine inside. The show was over and announced a great success, with loud applause, cheers, and peals of laughter from the audience. However, Gran Maloney was quite distressed when she realized the ermine was to be put outside. "Oh, no," she cried. "It is so cold outside." "He will be just fine," we assured her. "He has a wonderful winter coat to keep him warm." More coffee and pie ended a wonderful Thanksgiving day. As our guests bundled up for their departure, one couple said, "Before we came for dinner, we had been talking about what to write in our annual Christmas letter, and realized we really had nothing much in the way of adventure to share. Now we have a wonderful ermine entertainment tale to tell." As we said before, life by the Lynn was never dull, and often the source of great entertainment, thanks to God's incorrigible creatures like the ermine.
A little reading there by Christy Loney, who for about 8 years was the one of the caretakers at Shrine of Saint Therese out the road outside of Juneau, and a wonderful little story it was.
Style magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
This is Bird Note. The quintessential California landscape. Rolling hills dotted with oak trees. More than 300 species of birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians depend on these oak woodlands at some stage in their lives. The nutritional treasure here is the acorn, a high-quality and often abundant food. One year-round resident is the oak titmouse. 6 inches long, all gray, with a short crest, this bird is close kin to our backyard chickadee and just as animated and fun to watch. Its future, though, is uncertain. In 1985, a pathogen akin to the one that caused the Irish potato famine began attacking California oaks. The disease is called sudden oak death, and by 1999, it had become a full-scale epidemic. As the oaks die, they're cut down in an effort to stop the spread of the pathogen. But oak titmice require standing dead trees in which to nest and live trees in which to feed. A group called California Partners in Flight is working to help the oak titmouse and other birds weather the storm until sudden oak death is brought under control. To review their outstanding conservation plan, begin at our website, birdnote.org. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.